Hi, everybody. Nice to see you. Some of you again, some of you not again, but nice to see everybody. Very valiant of you to come on such a ridiculously beautiful day and talk about exams. I always wonder if it's helpful or a hindrance that we do exams when it's fantastically lovely. You know, it makes it harder to study, but at the same time, you've got reward when you get out of the exam score. So that's the upside. Well, the second of two classes, and I talked about certain things last time just to do with structuring essays, with what is supposed to be excellence, what is supposed to be the mark of a good essay. And that was about a number of different things. That was about structure. A friend of mine did a PhD in, an undergrad as a mature student actually, and she said, why do they keep talking about structure all the time? She said, how anal are they that they need some kind of obsessive, clear, structured, you know, flagged argument that they can follow? Aren't they clever enough to be able to follow my thoughts? You know, and you had to kind of say, well, that's not what intelligence is about. It's about taking material, putting it into a meaningful shape that makes sense of it, and then giving it back to the lecturer. And eventually we made a little bit more sense of structure. I'll talk about that again. Last time I stressed the importance of reading a lot, getting all that material in your head. The thing about exams, which is nice, is that you've got a longer time to prepare for them. Right? You can go and do the work you didn't get to do last time. You can do all that reading. You can spend a day on question three, just sitting in that section of the library on the floor, covered in books, making notes on everything you can find in there. And that day will be so well spent. That day will make the difference in many cases. I emphasized originality of argument. I emphasized quoting, citing all the time, scholars who can back up your points. Your points may be excellent. You'll get a whole essay of excellent points, but if it's not cited, you won't get the points for them that you should. Whereas you'll get twice as many points if you can say, and by the way, this point about whatever it is, Buddhist rituals in Thailand, has already been confirmed by evidence from this, this, and this writer. It's been argued against by this writer, but we can see that they're wrong because of this. You know, you've made your point, you've cited, you get 1,500 points instead of none. So different points that were stressed last time. I'm going to talk a little bit today about what I think a really good exam essay involves. And lots of declaimers at the beginning, the disclaimers. Different faculties will want different things. Different professors, different subjects will want slightly different things. Some subjects are more theoretical. Some subjects are more factual, information-based, historical. But I think there are certain basic principles of what a good exam essay involves. So this is something that hopefully will be helpful or thought-provoking. Now, the reason I said that about how these being recorded, I'm going to edit this part out, because actually before I start, I want to hear from you guys what are the issues in trying to prepare for exams. What is the hard thing about doing exams? What are the things you'd like to get better at? Anything?
Focusing the stuff I know to make it relevant to the particular question and the particular wording of the question.
Yeah. And that's so important. Yeah. I'll talk about that in a moment.
I think I find that if I've got an hour to work out how to answer a question, then that's fine. But you've got to do that in 10, 15 minutes at the beginning. That's what I can't do it in that short amount of time.
Yeah, and I'll talk about that as well. That's important. Yeah, it's such a strange ritual to produce an intelligent argument that covers all the knowledge that's ever been written, more or less, you know, kind of, about this subject, and put it into a neat little, maybe six sides worth. You can't write more than 1,500 words in an exam normally, not much. To do that in an hour's time, hand it in as if it was your soul and then get marked on it, it's a strange thing that the universities make people do. what are you going to say?
Actually, you've just summed it up, really. Just getting such a broad variety of knowledge into an essay without simplifying it too much so that you lose the sort of specific point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And that's one of the things I want to say most strongly is to address that, which I found hardest. I'll retell my anecdote in a second. Anyone else?
I think for me it's just remembering, because it's about... it'll be 8 years since my finals when I do my master's exam.
Yeah.
So just remembering kind of how it all works. And
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'll address that as well. Anything else? Okay, well, I'm going to talk about each of these things. I actually think, and I said this in the last class, I told a little anecdote, which is meant to illustrate that to me, exams actually show you how to do academia. They show you how to do essays. They're a condensed form of everything that we do as an academic. And once you learn how to write a really good exam essay, you will always thereafter be able to write better essays in general. In some ways, exactly what you're talking about is what exams are meant to teach you to do. Vast amount of knowledge. Often, in your tutorials, in your research, you're writing an essay that's really meant to be... It's almost like you're thinking into your essay. You're thinking as you write, you know, covering this, covering that, covering this. You're pulling together lots of information. You're trying to make sense of it. You're still in the process of thinking, often in that earlier stage. And you'll get... One lecturer I was just talking to said, yes, I had a student who used to write 7,000-word essays. You know, I nearly refused to mark them, he said. But then, of course, I realized in a way that for that student, that was how they learn. You know, they remembered stuff better if they wrote it down. They took it in. It was helpful, you know. Not that you have to do that, but if you see what I mean, there's a process of lots of information that you're taking in, putting together into an essay, and you're trying to synthesize it, and you're just trying to learn at that stage. What happens when you go beyond that, however, is where the real thinking starts. It's the synthesizing. It's the analyzing. It's the making sense of it into different themes, into different issues, different questions, different areas of research, putting that into a structure, identifying the fundamental issues that it raises in understanding that area, and this is where the question will almost always help you out. And then, having identified the question that relates to all this knowledge that you've amassed, figuring out what answer you want to give to that question. Figuring out the best way to give that answer. It's probably best if I address the history first, but then if I look closer at the text, that will clarify it, and then I can pull back and look at these two scholars who fight over what the text really means. You know, figured out what the best way to give your answer is. You've done all that, like stages along the way. And then planned out that structure of answer, taken each point and made sure you've got the evidence for each point to support it, checked to see whether you need any scholars, any texts, any further material, looked at your argument and thought, have I missed anything? Are there some weak links here? I didn't really know about this. Gone back to the library, spent 2 hours in that section, addressed it in whatever way you need to feel you feel you need to address it. Once you've got all of that, then you're ready to write your essay, as it were. The kind of essay that ultimately, ideally, would be your offering, as it were. Okay, so the essay isn't really supposed to be, not finally, ultimately, a real academic essay shouldn't be what happens at the first stage. It shouldn't be, it's useful to do that in tutorials, but it shouldn't really be, so here's the history, and here's the text, and here's this, and here's that, and a kind of spreading out of lots of information. Okay? Ultimately, what's wanted is an argument that you've carefully crafted, structured in response to particular issues that you've identified. A smaller, more concise, sort of tighter, clearer issue. That's okay. You may have a chair. Okay, perfect. There's a chair here. Okay, great. Okay, so what you want is not the big, what I've put at the top of this handout, your tutorial essay is a rich tapestry, right? It may have lots in it, may be quite dense, have a dense fabric. It may not, because you may have had like 3 days to do it and had a hangover. But, you know, ideally, there's quite a lot in there. Oh, are there any more handouts? No. Sorry, can I get you one at the end?
Sure.
Yeah, that'd be great. What did I say? Your tutorial essay is a rich tapestry. Your exam essay should be a concise, clear-cut crystal. That's just my very visual mind. That's how I think about it. Not this big text. It should be a clear, well-constructed, dense piece of work. Now this, if you can get this right, it will make it so much easier for you in your exam. And here's where the anecdote comes in. I never got a first until I got to my exams, and I thought, how on earth am I going to achieve this? Because I'd always write these huge essays, and I'd get a 2-1. And I get a good 2, I mean, 2-1s are fine, they're fine. It, you know, it's about whatever level you want to reach, but the higher you aim, the higher your grade will be. You always take yourself up by aiming higher. I was trying to figure this out, and I thought, this is mad. How much can you possibly fit in an hour? In fact, in Cambridge, we only had 45 minutes, right, to cover the whole of Sufism or something crazy like that. Right. My hand would hurt. Right. My hand would still hurt. I'd managed 6 sides of writing. Once I think I even managed 8 sides of writing. It seemed miraculous, you know. And maybe occasionally I'd just scrape over and get that good grade that I wanted. But most of the time it was disappointing. I thought, what is I'm really supposed to be doing here? And finally somebody said, apologies for people who've heard this, I've heard that you can get a first with just 2 sides of handwriting in an exam. And you thought, that's crazy, because you could fit in all the information, right? But of course, they're not looking for information. They know. They don't need you to reproduce the introductory text in your subject. One of the greatest complaints of tutors and examiners is that someone has written a purely expository essay. They're just telling you stuff. This is what they do here, this is what they do there, this is what happens here, this is what's said there. That's not what they're looking for. And you can get very good 2-1s, I think, on that, but you can't be sure of it, and it will always disadvantage you. And plus, you will do more writing, more work that you don't necessarily need to. Okay, they're looking for you to be actually more intelligent than that, and braver. Okay, which is to say what you think. So the nice thing about the exam essay is that I, for instance, had to go back to my tutorial essays. Look at them, make sure I didn't lose, yeah, so if you want to push the window, I guess it's quite hot. I want to make sure I didn't lose any of the information in the essay and none of the ideas, but without having to reproduce all the labored description and explanation. Okay? Now, in the end, I discovered that myth that you can get a first in 2 pages, no, I don't recommend that you try it. It's better if you can write 4 or 6, right? And if you've got an hour, then you can write, you know, a bit more. But that's really not the important thing. The important thing is the quality of your ideas. That's really essential. What's important is that you are offering an argued response to the question that addresses key issues, the key issues that operate on that topic, okay, in an intelligent, interesting way. Like, some of the best work you can do is sit with a coffee, stare at the sky, and think really hard about that subject, just out of your own brain. That's the only way you're going to synthesize, analyze, and come up with your own understanding of the topic. Okay, and until you do that, you haven't really got an essay. Once you've got your idea, you've got your argument, you've thought about how it addresses the question, you've thought about how it deals with the field, then you can say, how am I going to use all the information I've acquired to back this up? But the information is serving your idea. It's not that you're desperately trying to produce the information. Okay. So I should always think of a good example in advance. It's hard because people are from different faculties. Maybe I want to write that, in fact, Tennessee Williams is fundamentally influenced by the Tibetan Buddhism of his little-known lover, right? No, that's based on fact. Let me do. Tennessee Williams is fundamentally influenced by his erotic attachment to an ideal of goddesshood. I don't know where that came from. It was something in my subconscious. The point is that I need to have covered all the information. I need to have read. Try and go into your exams with as much reading as possible. And try and do it in good time, because your brain will need a while to assimilate everything. You can read so much that your brain kind of starts to dribble out of your head. And you have to give yourself a few days to keep thinking about it, keep trying to structure that information. Eventually it will fall into place. Sometimes the more you read, the more you think about it, it will fall into place in your own more distinctive set of ideas. But do as much reading and research as you can. And as I said in the last one, often what will give you that extra edge is to look for, you know, cover the introductory books, cover the standard text. Look for something a little bit on the edges. If you've got an idea, if I'm realizing that actually Tennessee Williams studied Greek classical culture and was very interested in goddess images that he uses in his text, maybe I need to go read about history of classical education in the Deep South. Maybe I'll need to go read about perceptions of females in, I don't know, you know, Oedipus Rex or something. Maybe it would be kind of interesting if I went and did that extra bit of research on my own particular set of interests so that I can bring them back to my essay. You may or may not have time for that, but it will give your essay that extra edge. Right? And you do that if you want to, if you need to. So just to emphasize that there should be that information there. But what really matters is that you take the information and you're able to use it and not just repeat it. Okay. So, I'm going to get rid of my Tennessee Williams example. I don't like it, so I'm not convinced by my argument. What's one that I might have actually used? The key thing is, once you've structured your essay, each point that you make, you can then go back to your pool of information, find what's relevant, and bring it in. And in your essay plan, I want to emphasize the value of essay plans, for that point, you'll have your list of texts. You'll have your list, you know, and that may be just a name and a date. That's okay. That will help. And that name and that date, next to the point you make, often within parentheses, all you need is, you know, maybe there are three names and three dates. That means that's like eight words or something like that. But that has backed you up. And the beauty of that is that you won't have to repeat everything that's said in those introductory texts. Clearly, I'm going to go back to my original example from last time. Clearly, the Victorian anthropologists were not clear about the best methodology of understanding other cultures. You don't need to explain all the details of the problems. You can cite four scholars who've commented on this. Okay, 1, 2, 3. As noted by these scholars. Maybe you remember what context they noted it in. You know, in respect of James Fraser, E.B. Tyler, and this is reflected later in critiques of Leach or Levi-Strauss in such and such. Okay, that's all you've had to do. You haven't had to explain very much there. That leaves you free to go on and make deeper, more profound, more important points. Yeah. However, what hasn't been addressed is the actual motivations of these authors. Very little has been done to look at their lives and what their goals were. you can then say, you know, there has been some work, and you can cite these biographies, these writers, these historians talking about the period. You don't necessarily have to explain. J.G. Fraser was at Cambridge, he studied this, he had a classical training, blah, blah, blah. This is what happened, he wrote this in the text. The text has these many sections on classical literature and these many sections on the other. You don't need to say that necessarily, unless it's really pertinent to your argument. You can reference it. So this is one key way of taking the information that you've got and putting it into your essay in a manageable form where you don't have to write as much. You know, write about what's crucial to your argument, but you don't need to expositorily explain everything. You'll get much more points from bringing in those names. Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah, go for it.
Do you, because I'm thinking about this, like basically referencing an exam.
Mm.
I mean, you can't, I don't know, my brain anyway can't remember numbers.
Mm.
So I know I could just about probably remember when a book was written.
Yeah.
But I couldn't say, you know, on page 23 or whatever. And besides,
yeah.
I don't know how you'd remember that many citations anyway.
No.
So what do you suggest?
I agree, it's a hard one. Now, I'll be careful what I say, but in my experience, it's a scholarly convention that if you can remember the name and the date of the book, that's not bad,
yeah.
Right? If you can remember the name and the title, you know, that helps, that's okay. And if you really can't remember anything, just citing the name of the scholar and, you know, this scholar has made the point that, or has broadly taken a view or a position on this as being problematic in such and such a way. Fritz Stahl has brought into question the significance of meaning in ritual. Clifford Geertz has raised the issue of the interpreter's position in relation to the culture that they're viewing. You know, so in those cases, whatever you can put in is fine. You're quite right. I don't think anyone should try and remember author, title, date, page number. It's not going to happen. You know, but within reason, once you've realised how much you can remember, then remember it. I have the worst memory in the world. But I did, before my exams, put up, you know, a piece of paper on the wall for each essay I hoped to write, and on it were just a set of bullet points, between 3 and 8, depending on what kind of thing they were, that over the 3 weeks I had left gradually did sink into my mind, and I did remember them when I needed to in the exam. So, you know, part of that then is about having thought in advance about what kind of essay you want to write, what kind of argument you want to make. Who are the useful writers? What are the useful positions? What are the, you know, you can say, you know, Derrida has clearly made the point that we should question the stability of meaning. You know, you just have the two titles, the two books that are key texts that you can reference all the time. And you know that you're going to want to use it in reference to a particular question. And actually often those things, those few key jewels that you remember and have there as your tools, ready to deploy, will help across different essays. Even. Okay. But again, you can only do that if you've thought about it, you've figured out kind of what your thing is going to be. Now, crucial to this, I remember thinking, okay, well, if I'm only going to have a few pages and I have to make an argument, it's going to be, you know, good argument, I want it to be intelligent, interesting, valuable, but I have to make sure I don't lose points because it's a smaller essay. I have to show the same amount of knowledge in a small space. Okay, and that you can do. Usually, you'd be surprised if you look back at your essays and see how much is kind of description, discussion, explanation, whereas actually the key points that you've put in there could be lifted out and used much more succinctly. In support of a particular point that you want to make. And part of what you want to do is show the information in an intelligent way. Don't just say, such and such was born here in Manchester and lived a life of poverty. He went on and wrote a key book on the approach to other cultures. That's not really very helpful. You don't need to show that you know those facts. Any irrelevant material that you put in doesn't really get you points. Okay. What you might want to say is, it's pertinent to such and such's approach to other cultures that he grew up in a city renowned for its international trade, a port city which for a century had had a wide range of cultures going through it. As a man who grew up in poverty, he would perhaps have encountered people who were in the mercantile trades and had an awareness of a nascent pluralism in 19th century Manchester or something like that, right? You've showed the information, but you've used it. And maybe you're going to put it towards your idea. Okay, that's, again, that's kind of why sitting and thinking helps. If the information can't help you, you probably don't need it that much. Okay, because again, they're not asking you to write an introductory text, they're asking you to write an essay, and an essay doesn't mean an hour's worth of writing. An essay means a discussion, a response, a drop of ideas, right, from which your examiner will benefit. Because they can, they do. I shouldn't say this, I shouldn't go on the tape either, but when I finished my finals, actually because I had done so much work for them that I hadn't figured out before, I called my faculty. I'm sure they won't let you do this. This was long ago, and we had a really nice secretary. I called my faculty and said, can I have my scripts back? And they said, we don't normally do that. And I said, yes, but please. And I fluttered my eyelashes over the phone. And they said, oh, all right then. They incinerate them after a certain time. But they said, okay, we'll get them back for you. And they did. They found them for me. I picked them up. One of them was missing. And it was the one that I'd done best on. And they said, well, sometimes examiners take essays with them if they find them interesting, you know, which is frustrating to me. But it also is interesting because part of what it says is, yes, what you write is of interest. What you write may tell them something. That's really the goal. And they do read all that you write. They'll assess it, hopefully quite carefully. I think they usually do if you read examiners' reports. But the essay where they go, oh, yeah. Oh, yes, I didn't see. Yes, that does make sense of this. Yes, that's good. Oh, I get that. Interesting point. That's the one. That's the one that immediately they say, yes, they've got it. I'm going for a higher level now. Good. So I think that's an important thing to do. Now, I'm just going to go through this a little bit. And then I want to look at the actual classifications and criteria that I've taken here. I think these are off of the Oxford website. Format and goal. The first thing to realise is that an exam essay is not the same format as a tutorial essay. You know that, but don't try and reproduce a tutorial essay in exam conditions because it's impossible. It's an hour. You couldn't do it, you know. And you're not expected to. It was a great liberation to me when I realized that actually I had 45-minute exams. I could take 15 minutes to just sit and plan what I was going to write in response to the question. Think about the best way to answer it, create a plan, fit in all the information I could think of, come up with good ideas that supported it, little tweaking, little aspects of it. Oh, developing my argument. Oh, and then I can say this, and this fits with that other side of the question. And until I really liked the look of that little essay plan, you know, the things that I'd memorized, any of them, can I fit in them here as evidence? Can I think of anything? No, okay. And then after 15 minutes, I think in one of them after 20 minutes, I thought, okay, I've got it all here in the essay plan. I'm ready to start writing. And I only had 20 minutes left. But the beauty of it was, I knew exactly what I was going to write. And I wrote it, and it was quick and easy and satisfying to write. Whereas every exam I'd ever done up to then, it had been me sort of going, ah, you look at the question, your head explodes, you get panicky, you think, I better start writing or I'll never fit it all in. I'd write. My mind would meander. I'd go in the wrong direction sometime. I'd think, oh no, I've only got 20 minutes. How am I going to get back on track? You'd come back. You'd try and make them fit in. You'd lose track. You'd think, oh my goodness, I forgot to talk about this. I'd suddenly jump to another theme. At the end, I'd be like, so here's my conclusion. Something, write it down. Oh my gosh, next essay, right? You know, and I'd always go on too long. First essay would be huge, the last would be like one page. and that was like my recurring exam nightmare. Whereas this new thing was cool. it was kind of relaxed. I spent half the exam, you know, creating a thing that I liked the look of before I actually made it, creating the idea of it before I actually put it to action. You've got an hour mostly, probably most of you've got an hour in your exam. I really think you can take 15 minutes just to think about how you're going to answer. Okay. One thing that I want to say about that, however, is, and I think this is true, don't just read lots and lots. I mean, you can do that, and sometimes it works. But don't just read lots and lots and lots and lots, lots and lots and lots, and go into the exam and think, oh, I mean, not that any of you do, you know, but think, oh, there's a question, oh, I better answer it. But how am I going to answer it? Oh, man, how am I going to fit my idea into, that's not like my tutorial question. Look at the questions. And this isn't about trying to pre-guess the question, but look at the questions, identify what the themes are. Once you've chosen what your themes are going to be, you know, with one in reserve in case you get terrible, you get what you didn't expect, think into those themes. Look at past questions, look at all the different ways the question about that theme can be posed. They may come at it from one angle, they may come at it from a different angle. You look and you'll see maybe in a past exam paper, they came up with something completely different. Map out the questions, the issues, the debates on that topic, the different aspects of it, and make sure that you are ready to respond to each one. Usually, the more work you do to think about the real issues that come up on that particular topic, the more you do on that, the easier it will be actually to start adapting. Because you'll already have thought, I see how Islamic approaches to the Quran actually fit with the mystical tradition. Oh, yes, I see that actually it's important to notice medieval expansion as an influence on mysticism and how the text interacted with that. And suddenly all these things start to fit together. So that when you get to the exam, you've got a broader picture. You've looked at different issues, and then you will be ready to address whichever ones come up. And even if something a little bit new comes up, that won't necessarily be a problem.
Mm-hmm. So I know you're worried about being sued, but so are you suggesting that it's better to really go into depth on, say, four topics? There's going to be three essays, four topics, than to sort of spread that on six topics.
Well, this is a controversial thing. I mean, but I think a lot of students do, you know, and a lot of students are advised, look, you know, figure out, you know, maybe if it's three topics, maybe you want to prepare five. But I don't think most people prepare on all of them. Is that right with you guys? Are you advised to, you know, if you're going to only have three topics, are you advised to revise the whole set of exam questions or to focus on what you think you're likely to answer on?
Depends on the paper.
Depends on the paper. That's interesting.
Not really advised.
Not really advised.
I was told in theology that it's quite good. It's don't narrow down too much. Got a minimum six.
That's interesting.
It's quite a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well then I'll be careful about that. Yeah, go ahead.
The exam that I'm scheduled for is historiography, which covers eight time periods, eight genres of how to write history.
Yeah.
So it's not like there's a theme.
Yeah.
Other than how you write history.
Yeah.
But in terms of that, you're just, each of the questions, you know, are specific to those. There's 15, like 15 questions, you answer three of those.
Mm-hmm.
They're scattered from the Gospel of Acts. I mean, the Book of Acts to Herbert Butterfield.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just such a huge.
But do they come, but let's say within that range, can you identify five particular things that do come up recurringly? Because usually that's how a syllabus works. I've put this down here, under guessing the question. While the precise wording of a question on a certain theme varies year by year, the same fundamental issues will be in play because it's addressing the same material and scholars. Okay, there are only so many basic issues you're going to have to address in a certain area. In studying Genesis in the Old Testament, certain things will come up recurringly because of the material, you know. So in some ways, and this is what I mean, it's not about tricking the examiners by guessing their question and preparing for that. It's actually about identifying what the themes, the issues, the questions that are within that subject that your exam questions are really pretty likely to address. So, and if you've addressed those themes and thought about ranges of ways in which you could write essays on them, and enough that you've become fairly flexible, so if somebody throws a new issue at you, you've thought yourself your way through that topic so many times that you're pretty good at coming up with a response to it, then it won't be such a problem which specific thing comes up. It may be true that in your subject there aren't recurring particular topics or themes, but that's pretty rare. I think that is pretty rare. I know that on every paper it's always assumed. You know, that's how your tutors often set your exam questions, your tutorial essay questions, sorry, is by looking at the exam papers and saying, well, this tends to come up, right? Devotionalism tends to come up, and ritual tends to come up, and such, so let's look at that.
So we can depend somewhat on the relativity of exams and set texts and tutorials.
Yeah. Talk to your tutors about it. That's classically how it's done. Okay, is that there are certain fundamental themes that arise, and those are the themes that books are written on in that area. You know, those are the themes that people teach on in that area. The teaching syllabus won't change that much year by year, and so there are patterns in there that you can kind of draw yourself towards. So that's one point. That I kind of want to make in that respect. When you, from my experience, and I'm going at this in a roundabout way, sorry, I've found that has meant for me that preparation and practice is a big thing. And again, when I finally got to my exams, this was a new concept. I was used to some bizarre concept of brilliance where you're supposed to come in and go, yes, I'm full of ideas, write, and everything works out well. And when it came to it, actually, it was necessary for me to go back to my tutorial essays, do much more reading than I had done before. It was helpful, at least, depending on how much you want to do. It was helpful to go back, look at them, take out the important, make notes on my own essays. It's interesting to make notes on your own essay because you realize which bits are important and which bits really aren't. You analyze your own thinking in a way, and you can take the essence out of your... And it also means that it frees you up to take what you wrote and go forward, do more, do better. Figure out the interesting ideas you had that you want to develop more. Figure out the gaps that you left out. Okay, it doesn't have to take forever to look at your essay. Sit with your coffee, look at your essay, figure out what's in it, figure out what it needs. It can take you an hour. It's so useful, such a helpful thing to do. Go and do that reading. Even if you sit in the library, it takes you 2-3 hours. It can take much more than that, but even if it's just that. You're boosting that essay you wrote up so much more. You're stepping up a whole level from it, and that makes a big difference. Like I said, it's an exam, so other things you're going to have to do is once you've figured out what you want to write, you're going to have to put it in your head, like memorizing scholars, fields, themes, issues. I went as far as memorizing the essays I wanted to write, the basic essay structures, actually making sure it was adaptable to different essay questions. I practiced. I did a lot of practice exams, right? So, because I knew that I had a problem with writing enough and what I wanted to write in those, for me, 45 minutes, for you an hour. So I did that. And I prepare on such a subject. I prepare on, again, Genesis, Old Testament, or concepts of king sovereignty in the patriarchs. And I prepare. I'd look at different ways I could answer the different questions that came up. I looked at the different angles they provided. I wrote essay plans. I wrote a new essay plan for the different question. I decided that I would try and write that essay plan into an essay within the hour that I was given. I would do that. Let's say that would be a day. So I'd have looked at the essay, done some more reading on it, looked at essay questions, brainstormed essay plans in response to them. Once I've got the basic structure of my essay plan, I'd start putting in little arrows with different bits of evidence that I'd add in. Maybe I'd go back and do a little bit more reading or thinking or looking for more bits of evidence or what have you. And maybe by the end of the day, the last thing before I went to sleep in a frenzy, hopefully you won't be, you know, under this much of a push. I was, because I hadn't really thought about it before. I would give myself an hour and I'd try and write that essay under more or less exam conditions. And it did train me to be able to, you know, without my notes, plan, go in, write. Got me used to following it through, not digressing too much, and feeling comfortable with doing that. And also memorizing things, like, it made me better at that. My first exam, and again, you don't have to be this, you know, worried about it. My first exam that I had was a philosophy of religion exam, and I'd been nervous about exams in the past. And the hour before the exam, I sat in the faculty library and did a practice essay. Okay, yeah, I know how to do that. Yeah, I'm good on that. And the best part of it is, hopefully at the end of that practice essay, you don't just feel like, oh God, I'm going to die. You feel like, I like what I wrote. You feel like, I stand by what I have to say in this. I think it's interesting. It expresses something that I'm interested in, I feel is valuable, and I like the way I structured it. I think it's kind of cool the way I argued it. Although maybe next time I do it in a slightly different way, but that's okay because I can. Having done that practice essay, looked at it, thought, oh, next time I want to do this, I just walked around the corner next door and went into the exam room and just did another practice essay, except it was the real essay. But I was okay with that. I was ready for it. I knew how to put things into that shape. Right. That's just an example. So this business of guessing the question is related to not guessing the question, but preparing for themes. Okay. What happens when you get into the exam and you get a question that is not the questions that you prepared? Okay, it won't be by definition. What you do is not panic. Sometimes was inclined to do. The deep structures of understanding that subject will be the same because it's the same subject. The question gives you a fresh new angle. Sometimes the question gives you exactly what you need to put some bright creative spark into your essay. Your essay will always be creative in the exam. It will always be under pressure. It'll always be just you. You won't have your notes there, so it's going to come out of you. And if you are practiced enough and ready enough, it will come out in a way that you're pretty happy with. Okay. In the end, you learn to see the variation in the questions as quite positive. I've put what the different questions do is offer you a way to add some new light, some novel angle, some illuminating approach to the material. Okay. By the time I got to the essays, I felt like, this question, I know basically what it's asking me, but it's asked it in a slightly different way that gives me a new idea. Let me make a note on that and see if I can address that new angle here. How can I use it to alter the ideas I've had before? There's going to be a creative moment where you reassess that. And that's why I think you do need to give yourself time at the beginning of the exam, of each question, to plan. It may be the question you expected, and you're basically replicating everything that you have in your memory and in your brain onto paper, ready to go ahead and write it out. You may need to do it in detail. In some cases, I made sure that I'd written out every date, every quote, every blah, 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 every bit of information I wanted to put into my structured essay before I even started writing. Okay. Sometimes you may need to do that. You may not. You may make sure that you've got your bullet points. Yeah, I know where I'm going, so I won't get lost. And then you can go ahead. But it's really worth stopping and doing that. Partly that means that there won't be any point in the exam, I don't know if you've had this experience, where you stop and you think, oh, where was I going? I was going to go, what do I say next? And that can happen quite a lot, I think. You go back and you look and you know exactly where you're going. You know what the trajectory is, and that's very important. Okay. So I've written here, your exam essay will be both pre-prepared and improvised based on the particular question that is being asked. You can practice adapting to questions and altering your plans. Okay. Now, from here I want to go back to that second point, what's in the question? Clues to intelligent answering. you're talking, someone talked about the question itself, making your information relevant to the question. The question is key. The question is God in your exam, in many respects. The question is what you have to answer. And you will lose points if you answer and then at the end you're like, I'm not really sure how this is relevant to the question, but it's something I know. Would you like to know it too? Right, that's not really the goal. If you do meander, that's okay. You can almost always bring it back to the question, but do spend a paragraph at the end saying, what was the question? Was it, you know, should... Someone give me an example. should... St. Anselm be seen as a fundamentally rational theologian. Okay. That question is one you have to answer. Make it clear in your introduction. What they say is true. Make it clear in the introduction how you're going to answer it, that you've thought about it. Make it clear in your conclusion how you have answered it. Do that. If you don't do it, they may not see it. The structure may be in your head. You'll see that obscurely by talking about the Muppets, you've shed crucial light on St. Anselm's approach to rationality, you know, but the examiner won't see it if you don't put it out there, and it will never hurt. And it will usually clarify your ideas to yourself, and often you'll think, and this fits into the whole medium of theological work at that time, and this totally reflects what Derrida has to say about the nature of the theological work. Oh my gosh, I'm a genius, right? And you put all that down, you feel good, you've made those connections, and it works. Okay, so conclusion can do a lot for you in that respect. But you do need to always make sure that you're touching on that question. The best thing about a question, I swear to you, the best thing about a question is it gives you your essay. Okay, I talked about this. I did a little exercise once where I'd look at each question on an exam paper, and I'd realize that each question gave you an argument in its language. So it was my one, is St. Anselm fundamentally a rational theologian, or a fundamentally rational theologian? Is St. Anselm, okay, we'll leave those out, fundamentally a rational theologian? Is he a theologian? What does it mean to be a theologian? What do we expect of that? Okay. He is one of the earliest theologians. He's one of the people on whom we've created the category of theologian. But what was he really trying to do? Was he trying to prove the existence of God or not? Well, that in itself involves all sorts of debate. What place does rational proof have in that period? And what was the role of the theologian? You can look at historically. What was his job? What were the conditions under which he was writing? You can look at it philosophically. Is it possible to produce proof for faith? You can look at it in a range of other ways as well. You can focus on the text. You can go back and look at his text and say, well, in what sense is this theology? Does this fit with what we think of as theology? You can look at it in terms of the later tradition. Is he writing in the same way as other theologians? Is he some way radically quite different, actually? All of those things are giving you ways to address the question in quite an interesting sense. Try a different word. Is he fundamentally a rational theologian? What is rational? Where do we get the concept of reason? Is it appropriate to talk about it in the context of St. Anselm? You know, what the idea that he's been since called a saint, but he's also seen as a philosopher. Are they in contradiction? Which one is true? You can look at these issues. Each word will give you something that is a way to answer the question intelligently, interestingly. That's why the question is there. Okay, so I've written, every question gives you an argumentative structure because it's a question, ideally. It's always hard if they say comment on such and such. But even that, comment on concepts of servitude in the book of Genesis. Right? They're pointing you to that because there's a lot there to do with servitude. What do we think of when we think of servitude? What is the Hebrew word? Was there a very different conception? Does it reflect a different feudal or patriarchal structure? Is there an opposite there? Maybe, you know, usually there's one side and there's the other side. Do the concepts of servitude have a relation to concepts of kingship in Genesis. No, in fact, they do. And that's one of the things you find. So each word, the very question itself, is there to point you to issues and debates that it wants you to address. Every question has a question hidden within it. Okay, and you have to figure out what that is. Because they, as I said in the last seminar, they're asking you not only to comment on the material, but also to comment on the field, on the scholarship about that material, to show that you understand the issues, you understand what's been said, you understand the questions, you understand the problems that the field is having in trying to advance in understanding this subject. And you are a scholar who's willing to try and address those problems and take it forward. And you can do that. It's actually much easier than it sounds. It's often true, I think, that people who come to subjects fresh will see things that people who are in it at a later stage don't necessarily see. You know, sometimes scholars will become very entrenched, and you can look at it with different lights, with reference to different sets of reading, with reference to different disciplines, and come up with interesting new things. Okay, and I've just put at the end here, so every question gives you hidden, sorry, under that what's in the question, and every question gives you hidden clues. Almost every word in a question is suggesting issues, controversies, and debates that you can address. Often when you return to the question in your conclusion to show how you have answered it, you will end up showing that the question itself has to be refined. Is Anselm a fundamentally rational theologian? Should be redefined perhaps as what was really the concept of theologizing, of thinking about religion in Anselm's period, and how should he be reassessed in the light of the goals of reason and faith at that time? Okay, which is actually, you know, much deeper question in many respects. What does it even mean to think about God? Did they have a different understanding of that process in that time? Have we been restricted or prejudiced since then in how we think of these things? Can we receive new information from Anselm about different possible ways of approaching these things? And the answer is usually yes, and that it's interesting and useful and potentially quite profound, you know, in many cases, if you want it to be, in whichever way you find interesting. So that's a classic. But as you come back to say that, you are addressing the original question and you're showing how you've changed it. You've answered the original question, changed the original question, found underlying issues, maybe even pointed the way forward to how we ought to look at them in future and what future scholarship should be done and how it influences the field at a wider level. Okay, that's a lot, but you can do that. You can do parts of it. And that's much more interesting than repeating what you read in the introductory chapter on St. Anselm, you know? And you'll get rewarded for that. Okay, well, you know, again, in that context, I've put here structure. Organization is everything. It's the foundation. And let me encourage you to be explicit about structure. When I talk about writing essay plans, I talk about bullet points, I talk about figuring out what your points are and how they turn into your argument that you want to make. And how they should follow a logical progression of some kind towards that. It sounds almost crude, but it is actually really important. And if you need to say in each paragraph, you know, make it clear in your first sentence what you're looking at now and why. If you need to have a paragraph that just says, but that's one way of looking at it, let's reassess this in the light of recent scholarship by such and such and see if this clarifies the concept of reason in the medieval period. Do that. It will be very clear. And as I said last time, an essay is like a short story. It will take the reader with you through the plot of your essay. Okay, and you won't lose them. And the examiner will be with you at every stage. And they'll be like, oh, yeah. Cool. They made this point, and then they backed it up, and then they made this point, and they backed it up, and then they showed how this point meant that we have to see things in this light. And then they referenced everyone else who said that and showed how they need to improve, and it was really compelling and convincing. I knew what they were talking about, and I thought that was great. Tick. you know, rather than I see what they're saying, there's lots of information, but I'm not really clear what is their distinctive argument here. Structure it and don't be scared to make your structure clear. I put each paragraph or section should make a clear point in the development of your argument, each making a logical step towards what you eventually want to say. And often exam rubrics will say that they want to see analytic clarity. It's clear how you've analysed this and why you're saying what you're saying. Argumentative power. You have an argument and you're making it powerfully. That both means that you're not scared to say, such is the case, but also that it's powerful because you backed it up. Okay. Too often students fall into one camp or the other. They are ready to say, I think this, but they do it simplistically without backing themselves up. Or you get the students who put in lots of information, some quite interesting information, lots of research, but it's not really clear how it's come together into a clear argument. There was a study done in Cambridge at one time, some years ago, it was like 15 years ago, but just to see why women were getting so many fewer firsts than men. And the answer seemed to be that they were less willing to state strongly an argument and to disagree with contemporary scholars. It was almost seen as bad form. You know, it was sort of what we were saying before in the last session. You are supposed to state what you think. And you can disagree with anyone. We can disagree with the examiner, but cite the text, say why you disagree. Okay? You will get points for your independent thinking. You will get points for having thought about the thesis, assessed it, looked for evidence that supports or doesn't support or opposes it, and used it well. That's what they want most. Really, that's what it's all about. So don't be scared of doing that. Note that it says analytic clarity, argumentative power, and marshalling evidence. Your argument, but you've got evidence marshalled towards it. Okay. Guessing the question, we talked about that. I put at the end of that section, your exam essay will be both pre-prepared and improvised based on the particular question that's being asked. It's kind of like jazz, right? You know the basic song, but when you get there, you're going to have to improvise a little bit. But that's the exciting part. It's when you start scatting. You can practice adapting to questions and altering your plans. Yeah, I said that. Resources, I kind of said at the beginning, amassing and showing knowledge, facts and citations, alluding and quoting. This idea, again, that you don't have to explain everything. You can allude to a book as long as you talk about, you say, this is the book, this is the position, this is the scholar. Okay. Quoting is good. For each, my own technique was that for each essay I wrote, I memorized two short, pithy quotes that I could remember, my bad memory, right? And it might only be half a sentence, just a crucial phrase that somehow captured a particular position that was going to be really useful in talking about pretty much any issue that came up on that subject, right? And that's often true. In almost every topic, there are a few key scholars who've made some fundamental point, and often you can find that phrase that really puts that crucially. And once you've got it, you'll always have that to refer to in whatever argument you make. You may also, maybe you want a phrase from that classic scholar's position. You may also want a phrase from some other, maybe newer scholar, more controversial scholar, a bit of recent research that supports ideas you have to counter that classic position with, just for instance. So selectively choosing quotes, scholars, things, people, books to refer to, text to refer to, is a really useful thing to do. Drawing on appropriate subdisciplines, reading text with sensitivity, showing that you have good analytic sensitivity to things is very important. Knowing the issues and controversies, well, that's kind of what I've been talking about. Rubrics for a good essay talk about what it means to write as a scholar. Subtlety, complexity, and possible disagreement are signs of a first, they say. Signs of a good essay. Subtlety, complexity, and possible disagreement. You can deal with the subtleties. You can deal with the contradictions. You can go against what a scholar says. Own judgment on main themes. Don't just repeat. The bright spark, originality and sophistication, standing on the shoulders of giants, so you can disagree with them. You can juxtapose them in creative ways. They often say following an obvious line and accepting concepts uncritically indicates a second. Don't take the obvious set of themes. Obviously, study the Upanishads talks about asceticism and consciousness. Look for the new angle. Look at the new scholarship. Look at people who've challenged the way that we think of it. Okay, you may choose to reject the new scholarship, but you're able to deal with new, subtler, more interesting angles. Your field, whatever it is almost always in the process of reassessing the way it's looked at these subjects before. That's what's constantly happening. And you can choose any of those revolutions that you think is right, but make sure you know what the different revolutions are. Exam conditions, I've just put at the bottom, practice. Don't be afraid to take 15 minutes in exam. That's fine. Clarity, structure, fitting in your good ideas and evidence in the right place is much more important than length. And I won't look at the master's thing, but let me just look at the undergraduate classifications here, because they're relevant in both cases. I think this is the last thing I'll do. If anyone needs to go ahead. The criteria below are to be used in marking scripts and theses, right? Please note that in connection with the introduction of the range 100 to 70, the division has made the following request. Examiners are encouraged to award high marks to good scripts. Marks above 85 should be reserved for scripts that are quite outstanding. Okay, that's as it is. 100 to 70, first class script. Actually, I'm going to go from the bottom up because I think that's more useful. Let's start with third class script, 49 to 40. Work that is generally weak with muddled argumentation, but containing some evidence of knowledge of facts and analytic skill. This class does qualify for an honours degree. Weak with muddled argumentation, some evidence of knowledge of facts and analytical skill. So you put some of the facts in. You've maybe attempted some sort of argumentation, but it's kind of muddled. You know, you go here, you go there, you're not quite sure what you're doing. So it's weak, it's a very weak essay. You've not got much argument, you've got not much information. 59 to 50, a lower second class, 2-2. Competent work with no major defects. So you've covered basically most of the key information ideas, but giving an incomplete account of the question, or marred by inaccuracies. Or work which demonstrates lapses in, but does not lack, analytical and argumentational skills. Note that even for a 2-2 and a third, you have to have those argumentational skills and the analytical dimension in there. Again, you know, purely expository stuff gets you nowhere, even at this level. No major defects, but giving an incomplete account of the question. The question is always going to determine, you know, to some extent, how you're marked. But if you accept that and orient your whole approach to the question as something which is asking you about particular issues, it's going to make all your writing easier. So you kind of embrace that approach and everything gets a bit better. 69 to 60, upper second class script. Work displaying analytical power and argumentation of a high standard, but with less comprehensive and thorough command of evidence than that associated with a first. Or work showing considerable thoroughness, but less analytical skill or less clarity in organization. Now this is, you know, two ones and two twos are what most people get, and they're fine. What's key is that you've shown that you know the information, you are able to analyze it into themes, so you've put some clarity into it. You're able to analyze the ways that we try and understand it, analyze what's going on in those texts or phenomena. And indeed to argue, to create an argument at whatever level, you know. What often happens is a student kind of has an argument in an essay. You can see certain ideas coming out, you know, certain paragraphs will start to make arguments, but they haven't taken it through the whole essay and made it clear. That's partly because they've hardly realized that it's in there themselves. That's why exams are good, because you get to go back to your essay where you kind of have started to get an idea, but by then it was 2 a.m. and you had to just basically round off your essay and give it in. You get to go back and find that argument in there. That's yours. This is exciting. I mean, if there's any part of you that really likes academia, then that's where you go, hey, this is cool. This is creative. This is me. This is, you know, potentially quite interesting, actually. And each essay should become interesting to you, hopefully, by the time you get to the exams. So analytical power, argumentation of a high standard. analytical power. I was just talking to a theology professor about this. He says, well, they may not come up with something absolutely original, but if they've shown that they can synthesize different texts, different ideas, different writers, analyze what they're saying and juxtapose them intelligently, that's good. That's very important. That they're able to, you know, again, a student will say, I think the crucial thing here in Genesis is to realize that these themes of kingship come up again and again, and that relates to the insecurity of the people at that time as a political entity. And they'll go, that's good, that's fine. And indeed, a couple of scholars have said that. What they need is, now that you've written that in your tutorial essay, you need to go deeper. You know, that's where you say, don't stop there. Jump over that fence and go into the next field. Why were they unstable at that time? Did kingship really give stability to the people around them? How was it seen? Was it simply that they knew about the kings of Babylon or Assyria because there was a lot of propaganda about them? Was it because in a tribal, they'd moved from a patriarchal society to a tribal society of elders and they missed having a central person? Was it really because that's how they envisioned God, and actually kingship was a metaphor for the kind of theology they were moving towards? Any argument, whatever argument you want is fine, but to follow it over into the next bit of thinking, you know, is how you get somewhere good, and that's distinctive and interesting. So, okay, reading out the very last bit. So, clarity and organization important. 170, first class script. Work displaying excellent analytical and argumentational power with good command of the facts and or arguments relevant to the questions, and evidence of ability to organize them with clarity, insight, and efficiency. Efficiency is going to be useful in the exam. When these qualities are evident throughout, the mark should be 80 or above. Where these qualities are evident throughout and the script displays original thought of near publishable standard, the mark should be 90 or above. You know, they say that. I had a student, you know, 2 weeks ago who said something I'd never heard that I thought, yeah, that's totally what the whole study of contemporary Hindu ideologies of text need to realize in order to stop bickering about these other issues that aren't really pertinent. You know, I wish this student could publish this as a book, because it'd be really useful for all of us in the field. And that happens regularly. There's stuff, your ideas go to those places. Doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to do this, but the seeds of that are always in there. And that's what you're building on. Okay. Look for your ideas. Look for your interests. Go further. Build them into a structure. Plan your structure. Think about it. Focus on that structure. And then take your information and pour it in to that shape. Okay, condense it so that you're ready to produce it. Practice, prepare, think your way around the field, around the subjects that are there. And then, you know, going into an exam where you feel that you have time to prepare yourself, to think about what you're going to say, and not panic about trying to pour in lots of information anymore, because that's not really the main goal, then enjoy it. It's possible to enjoy it. If for some of you, this will be the last time in your life that you think about these topics. It will be the moment which your, you know, 3 years has been for. And if you feel kind of like you're ready, you're going to do your best, you've got ideas that you're interested in, you like, and you're ready to put them into this, this 1 hour of your life on that topic, it can be such a high. Okay. Plus, when you get out, you feel good and you get to drink a glass of champagne. Unless you've got an exam the next morning. But then you get a really big glass at the very end. That's the crucial thing. So, I'll let you go. Sorry, I've gone a bit 10 minutes over. Any questions? Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I kind of have two, and they're quite related, I guess. I'll ask the second one first. For a philosophy essay, can we really just, do you think you can just cite an argument? For example, I said philosophy essay, I was writing a practice GCS question earlier, and I found myself having to explain Derrida's kind of just general sort of
what decentering is and how that relates to the self
and
how that's important.
Yeah.
I mean, could you just say?
You know what you can do? You know what you can do? And that's absolutely right. And that's what I had to think very carefully about. Think about why were you having to explain it? Was there a particular point you wanted to make in relation to it? Maybe you want to say that Derrida is decentering the self relates to, and I'm thinking from theology, relates to asceticism in the modern period, or post-Holocaust aesthetics where you don't focus on egotism or something. There's some particular thing you want to use it for. You can refer to his theory and then refer to a particular thing about it. Okay, a particular feature of it that, in fact, you wouldn't really know about or understand if you hadn't already understood his theory,
mm-hmm.
right? So by referring to that particular thing, that particular aspect or some particular consequence or implication of it, you've shown that you don't need to explain it. You don't need to explain anything as such to the examiner because they know it. You can show that you know all these things by doing something intelligent with it that you couldn't do if you didn't know it already, if you see what I mean. Yeah. So it's not necessarily explicitly to go through the whole thing. But you can reference the book, and you can reference, you know, any other secondary literature that's addressed those things, which in a way is an even smarter way of doing it. Yeah.
And my first question was you kind of said try and find an edge.
Yeah.
I've been finding that, particularly with GCS, it's kind of the case where the questions are so big that actually just to survey, I find that I kind of find the edge, but it's actually, I feel like I'm obligated also to explain all these other things, and I feel like I'm actually just going to produce a summary of the different debates and then go, and this is why I think about it like this.
That's a hard one. And in some ways I think that's why exams that give you questions are easier. What's the answer to that? One thing is that you can always try and signal that you know the wider field. So the reality is, if you write a 4-page exam, you may spend, you know, the first half in your introduction, which shows that you know key issues and you have an idea of where you want to go. You might then spend a page and a half and say, you know, now of course there's this aspect which has been addressed by these people. And in this area, the key issues are these things. That's in contrast to this field, you know, where actually people have looked at it in a very different way, people like such, 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 and such. And they've done that and produced these sets of issues. And as a result, there's a fundamental argument between these two different approaches, okay? And you've surveyed those fields, but not by explaining everything. You've talked about where they stand and what issues arise out of them. And what you can then say is, granted these things, and my understanding of the issues they raise, I think it makes most sense to look at this particular thing. Okay. So what you're doing is you are focusing, you know, and you can do that, but you're saying that you're focusing not because you don't know the other stuff, but because it's the best way to address the other stuff, if you see what I mean. And that can be quite a useful thing to do.